Welcome to ESIP's Global Economy Podcast. My name is Fredrik Eriksson, and today I'm talking to Elena Ryan. Elena is a senior fellow at ESIP and managing director at Pilot Rock Global Strategies, a trade and regulatory consultancy in the United States. She has long experience of US and global trade policy and was for more than 20 years at the United States Trade Representative, where she negotiated trade agreements in various parts of the world. I'm going to talk to Elena about US trade policy, the Trump administration, and what we can expect in US trade talks with China and the EU. Welcome to the podcast, Elena.
Thank you, Frederick. It's nice to be here.
I wanted to start talking to you about the current state of play in US trade policy. And during the conversation, I hope we're going to touch upon several type of issues, including China, European Union, etc. But to start with US-China and what's going on right now, well, first of all, I think we can say it's pretty difficult to know what's going on. The recent history is known in the sense that we have had the introduction of tariffs by the United States on Chinese goods, and China has retaliated. What is less known is what is going to happen now. We have heard that there are talks over some kind of deal and that these talks are in the final stages, but the actual substance of what that deal is going to contain remains somewhat of a secret, at least for those that aren't very close to the action. So I thought about starting to ask you not so much about what's going on, but how you would describe the current state of play and what type of expectations that you would have for what's going to happen between the United States and China. Do you think there is going to be a deal between the Trump administration and China?
So this is a very interesting question. And I think that there is there's a lot of noise in our system right now, particularly with respect to trade, where there's a lot of rhetoric, there's a lot of chatter that seems to overwhelm the substance at times. And I think it is not entirely clear what the substance of what I think will be an eventual deal between the US and China. I think there needs to be a deal of some sort, because the measures that we've taken, not just against China, but more broadly with respect to the steel 232 and discussion of an autos 232, is having a very negative effect on our economy. And I think there's been some studies in the last couple of days, plus information about not only the US trade deficit ballooning in 2018, but also the US budget deficit, a separate matter, but maybe a more important matter, really ballooning. So even Ambassador Lighthizer, when he testified on the Hill, I think he said, you know, this is a little bit of an experiment because there are some real issues with China, not new issues, but issues that have been around that are pretty difficult to attack or to rectify, and some of which sit outside the WTO responsibility. And, you know, in the US, we're always very adamant on enforceable deals. So how do you create a deal and enforce it? This is kind of new ground. So I think there has to be a deal, as I said, but I'm not entirely sure what's going to be in it and how satisfied people will be. US business, Congress will be with whatever administration can come up with.
And do you think that there is a similar type of logic in the relationship between United States and US administration and the European Union? We've had recently not just the problems last year around the Section 232 tariffs on steel and Europe's retaliation, but a few other frictions in the trade relation as well. Now there are at least preparatory talks about trying to do a deal with each other, but of course that happens in the context of the Section 232 review on autos, and that's something which has alarmed a lot of watchers in Europe, especially in Germany. So do you think that there is a similar type of logic leading towards an agreement with the European Union as well, or do you see other types of frictions in that relation?
You know, that's an interesting question. I should say that the 232 alarms, the potential 232 on autos, alarms many people in the United States too, not just in Washington. You know, I've often thought that our relationship with Europe on trade in particular has long been one of allies, but also competitors. And that colors our relations in certain ways. I think the relationship is a bit different than the US-China relationship. Part of this stresses with China, it's a different form of government, plus an economy that's structured with much more state intervention, which is more difficult for businesses to deal with, but it's also more difficult for the US government to deal with. With Europe, you know, when I was working on TTIP, I always would tell people, you know, the good news is we know each other and we know the system. And the bad news is we know each other and we know the other system. We know the problems. There's a long history. And I think some of that is coming to a head now. I kind of look at the 232 on autos as a leverage point. I don't know that it will actually happen, but I wouldn't bet my mortgage on the fact that it wouldn't happen. I think that's kind of out there, and it may not be, it may be a spur of the moment decision from the White House, which seems to be the case in a lot of things on trade lately. You know, when we started the TTIP negotiations 5 years ago, there are a lot of people that said, oh, you could never do this because the US and EU just do things differently. But we got a long way towards a deal. We never finished the deal, largely because the administration changed on this side of the water. But there are some difficult issues on both sides. There are some red lines on both sides. They're tricky to deal with. It's interesting to think about the prospects. I don't think you can finish something quickly with the EU because we're both very complicated and the political systems are complicated. And while we're two years away from a political or a presidential election, campaigning for which has already started, you know, Europe is in election mode too, at least at the European level, you know, for the next 6 months until the new president and commission take office in the fall. Well, and the other thing is, much like here, it seems that the composition of the European Parliament may look different than the current parliament. And you don't know how that impacts any kind of deal that the outgoing Juncker administration may be able to achieve with the Trump administration.
Yeah, no, indeed. And I don't think anything is going to happen in EU trade policy until a good way into 2020, because it's going to take a while in order to get the new commission in, and they will have to find a way around before they are going to start to do something of real substance. There may be sort of preparatory talks that can continue until then. But I wanted to pick up on what you said around the somewhat complex relation that exists between the United States and Europe, that it's both an ally and a competitor. So one thing which has surprised me a bit, or perhaps I shouldn't say surprised, but I think it's been a somewhat strange thing given the fact that there is so much emphasis on China in US trade policy. And when we listen to sort of the grievances of individual businesses as well as of leading people in the administration, they broadly tend to be much more stronger when it concerns China than when it concerns, you know, Mexico or Europe for that matter. On substance, I would say most people in Europe make the same analysis around the problems with China. And most leading politicians on this side of the pond is certainly moving into a more confrontational posture when it comes to commercial policy vis-a-vis China. Why do you think it's been so difficult for Europe and United States, and for that matter, Japan, to find common ground in how to deal with China? United States seems to have chosen what is predominantly a bilateral strategy. Europe, I don't know if it has a strategy vis-a-vis China, but certainly it would like to collaborate with the United States over it?
You know, that's also a good question. I think, you know, at the outset of your question, you mentioned that businesses in the U.S. are very focused on China, not so much on Mexico, not so much on the EU. There have been long relationships with those countries, with Mexico, with Canada, with the EU, between the U.S., with the U.S. business community. And indeed, as we found out, TTIP, many U.S. businesses have also established themselves in Europe, as many European businesses have established subsidiaries in the United States and largely ran their businesses through those subsidiaries. So, you know, there were issues, especially if you're doing a lot of exporting in particular sectors. But, you know, there's a long history, including as leaders in the WTO over many years. Not perfect relations, but certainly workable relations and institutional structures, governmental structures, economy structures that are similar. China is a whole nother ballgame, a very different institutional and economic setup, and a place that I think it's much harder to do business in. There's also a sense that China doesn't play by the rules. You know, this is when the belief of some that the WTO is not constructed to deal with all of the issues. And I think there's probably some truth in that. I mean, the WTO is now back to 1995 and the GATT before it. Some of the measures that are disciplined are not there. You know, I have to say, as a veteran trade negotiator, it's tough to see the US going it alone when a lot of the issues are really issues that impact many people and many governments, and that we could come together more effectively to discipline them. You know, steel is a good example. And I think Mrs. Malmstrom is in Washington right now, and part of her meetings was a trilateral with the Japanese and the US to talk about some of those issues where we all have common interests. There's, you know, we're in a little bit of a different world in the US in the last 2 years, and it's interesting to watch.
Do you think you're going to be in a different world for a longer period of time? How would you, for instance, look at the changes in Congress last autumn? Has that had an impact on the direction of trade policy or the broader politics of trade policy in America?
I think it will. I think it's starting to. The new NAFTA, the USMCA, is awaiting ratification in the Congress. And the House in particular is asking a lot of questions about some of the provisions, the Democrats in the House. The ratification of what we now call USMCA, USMCA, is very important, including, as I think Ambassador Lighthizer said at the hearing last week, I think he said, the trade program, it will be a failure without ratification of USMCA, because USMCA is the new template for US FTAs. So it's the administration is now working very closely with the Congress, including the House, to make sure that that agreement can be ratified. So that's obviously an impact that the Democrats have had. There's a lot going on in our political system right now, and the Hill plays a very important part. It's interesting to me, trade policy is largely the responsibility of Congress, but over time they have delegated some of their responsibility to the executive. And you know, there are some in the United States now that think that Congress needs to take back some of that delegated responsibility to make sure that the trade policy is more beneficial to American farmers and workers. So we'll see how that plays out over the next couple of years. I don't know, you know, the 2020 election will be a big issue for the United States, obviously. And whether we continue to go it alone or with more collaboration with allies may hinge on how that election turns out.
Yeah, no, that's going to be very important. Finally, Elena, I wanted us to talk just a little bit about another institution which has been floundering over recent years, which is the World Trade Organization. I think many of us that are watching Trump and his administration have difficulties trying to figure out whether there is a strategy behind what they're doing at the WTO now, especially with regard to the issue around appointment of judges and changes to the dispute settlement process in the World Trade Organization. And what I've been trying to come to a conclusion about is whether we have an administration that ideally would like to place a bomb under the entire system and just, you know, either make it as dysfunctional as you can or take it away. Or if they are basically trying to get a couple of changes, especially on the dispute settlement side, which is going to make the system, as you say, a little bit more like pre-1995, a GATT type of system where the obligations through the dispute settlement system is not going to be as demanding as they have been more recently. So it's a question about sort of, is it, you know, a strategy of trying to make the system dysfunctional, or do they really want to get those changes? And if they get them, they are prepared to move on and let the system continue to be relevant.
So I think the question you ask, what is the strategy? I know is a question that I ask myself several times a week, and that many people I know here in Washington ask the same question. The WTO is the system that we made, not alone, but it's a system that the US has led in, and we largely constructed it. You know, some years ago, not that many, one executive in the United States said to me, people ask often, you know, why we aren't pushing all the changes that have been proposed in the Doha round. And he said, you know, the WTO is very important to us because it has the basic structure of law that we need to function in markets. Sure, we'd like more, but the structure there is very important because it compels people to a single set of international rules. I don't know, Frederick, what the strategy is. I haven't figured that out. I'm not sure that others have either. But I think one test could be, this week it was announced that a WTO panel delivered a victory to the United States vis-a-vis Chinese subsidies on agriculture, which were deemed inconsistent in many ways with the WTO rules. So this is February. I think the appellate body will be down to two members by December if the reappointment process or the appointment process is not resolved somehow. This is an important victory for the US. And I don't know if there's anything in that agreement that we'd want to appeal. I'm sure the Chinese would want to appeal. How do you handle a system where the dispute settlement is important on a lot of issues, but if the system is not working, what good is your victory? So I think that's a question that's kind of spinning around right now. You know, I hope that while we seek to rectify some concerns in the WTO, that we can still ensure that the organization is functional.
All right, Elena. It's been great talking to you. Thanks so much for joining our podcast.
Thanks, Frederick.
And also thanks to all of you who have listened. Bye-bye.